You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of IDSA 2007, the 45th annual meeting of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. The conference took place in San Diego, California, from October 4th through October 7th, 2007.
Welcome. This is Bonnie Goldman, editorial director of the Body Pro. I'm in San Diego at IDSA 2007, one of the year's HIV conferences. Right now, I'm in the poster session, where researchers are standing in front of their posters, discussing the research and answering questions. There's nothing like hearing the results of research directly from those who actually conducted the research. It is these men and women who are transforming HIV treatment and care. In this podcast, the researchers will introduce themselves and then summarize their study. After their summary, I'll ask a few questions.
Hi, my name is Chris Garatzios, and I'm an attending physician, pediatrics, infectious diseases, and HIV physician in Montreal at the Montreal Children's Hospital, McGill University Center. And I actually went down to Miami in 2005 and did a fellowship at the under the tutelage of Gwendolyn Scott at the University of Miami. So what we did is we asked the question, what do the children who are infected perinatally that are now surviving into adolescence, what do they look like in terms of medically and psychosocially? Because this is a population of HIV-infected people that is becoming less and less. Because most of the young people that are getting infected sexually right now, and not perinatally. So what we did is we took all the children that were aged 13 to 24 years of age in 2005, and we looked at what they looked like in 2005. This was what this study came out with. It's called the Clinical Psychosocial Characteristics of Adolescents with Perinatally Acquired HIV Infection. We looked at the inclusion criteria. They had to be HIV infected. They had to be infected early in life. And they had to have been aged between 13 and 24, taken care of at University of Miami Pediatric Clinic. We looked at their height and weight at the end of 2005. We looked at clinical variables, so how many hospitalizations in 2005, what medications they were on, if they had any HIV disease problems, and if they had any sexually transmitted infections. And then we looked at their lab abnormalities, if they had any. We looked at all the resistance testing that they did in the past and see what kind of mutations their HIV had. And then we looked at their viral load, their CD4 count. We also looked at their CDC disease classification, what they started off with, their worst classification, and we compared them in 2005.
Meaning their baseline?
You describe an HIV individual, let's say a six-month-old presents to your clinic with PCP pneumonia, they are automatically given a C3. Clinical diagnosis is C, which is the worst classification. 3 is the worst immune classification. But that stays with them throughout their years. So if they're 20 years old and they've been very well controlled, they're still called a C3 because they've got the potential to drop back to a C3. However, maybe they're completely asymptomatic and they're an N1. So maybe it's best if we tag, every time there's a major change in their status, if we tag an extra little thing to the C3. So C3, N1 would probably be a better term to describe some of these patients. And we looked at their psychosocial variables, you know, what their family life, their education, what personal practices. We looked at their IQ, and the study showed that most of the kids were not undetectable. They did have detectable viremia, but most of the kids, 80% almost, had immune reconstituted. They were not immune suppressed. And if we compare to how many of them did better immunologically than clinically, if we looked at clinical status, the ones that went from a C to either a B, A, or N were 60%, and the ones that went from an immune status 3 to 2 or 3 improving were 73%. Major resistance was seen to HIV. 10% were multi-drug resistant. If we looked at their medical characteristics, one-third had neurological disease with HIV encephalopathy and cognitive dysfunction and developmental delay making up the majority of the problems. Most of the opportunistic infections, 30% of the kids had an opportunistic infection, but they weren't the classic ones because they were immune reconstituted.
Could you describe what they were?
Yes. They're candida, oral candidiasis, oral HSV, and a lot of the children had dermatophyte infections, tinea, fungal infections of their skin. Psychiatric illness also was a major problem. 34% of the children had a psychiatric illness with ADHD, depression, and anxiety making up most of these diagnoses. If we looked at The children who did have a psychiatric illness, 72% were receiving help for this, either medication or psychiatric therapy or both. Looking at the growth parameters, even if we looked at children who were above 18 years of age, most of them did not have, a lot of them actually, not most, but a lot of them were very short and did not exhibit any catch-up growth. And that's probably because most of this cohort did not receive HEART until after 1996 or 1997.
So there is a correlation between low growth and HIV disease?
Yes. In many reports and in the literature, it's very rampant. You can see this, that there is a growth delay. So looking at the psychosocial variables, 60% lived with people other than their biological parents. 80% were orphaned by at least one parent. Most of them were in school, about 98%. About 12% that were in special education classes. A minority were employed, 11%. However, the most important thing that I want to reiterate is that only about 65% were using barrier protection. Two children actually did get pregnant, or two adolescents did get pregnant, because only 40% of them actually disclose status. So some of them used marijuana. About 12% of those patients were either using marijuana, tobacco, or alcohol. And in Florida, there is a law that if you do not disclose your HIV status to your sexual partner, you go to jail. So five children got into trouble with the law. Three of those five actually went to jail because their partners actually sued them.
Are these males or females?
One of them was a female. Two were females, one was a male. Interestingly enough. But by the age of 13, though, in this cohort, 94% knew that they were HIV positive. But again, only 38% disclosed their status. The intelligence quotient, half of the kids had IQs below normal. And I would say a great number of them actually had it in the moderate to severe mental retardation range.
And what was, is there any idea what that was due
well,
to?
Well, this study was just a descriptive study.
Right.
We have done a study that is not presented at this IDSA, looking back 10 years and answering those questions. And, you know, is it the fact that HIV does something to their brain at an early age and, you know, affects them irreversibly? Affects their IQ irreversibly. They've got a lot of problems. They've got a lot of psychiatric problems. They've got a lot of HIV encephalopathy. And, you know, HIV does replicate in the brain as well.
And this wasn't due to HIV meds because many of these kids weren't on treatment.
They weren't on treatment earlier on, no. And we actually looked back at their IQs and they were always low. Compared to the general population, I mean, the mean IQ was 78.3, plus or minus 15 standard deviation. If you compare it to the national mean, it's 99, plus or minus 15. Whether the two groups are statistically significant, probably not, because our cohort is only 165 patients. But if we were to have more patients and look at them across the board in North America, we'd probably see a difference. So the major conclusions was that they're surviving. These adolescents are surviving if they're infected perinatally before 1992 with major medical problems. One-third suffer from neurological disease. One-third suffer from a psychiatric illness. Almost 50% are below normal for height. Major resistance is seen in their HIV. Most of them have detectable viremia, but only if about 18% are severely immune-suppressed. And they are also surviving with major psychosocial problems. 60% of them do not live with their biological parents. 80% are orphaned. Their IQs are lower than the national mean. More than one-third of sexually active patients do not use condoms, and two-thirds do not actually disclose their HIV status.
So pretty horrifying,
yeah,
descriptive.
It's almost a lost generation. You'd wonder what kind of, you know, how they're going to contribute to society in the future.
Well, they're dealing with so many issues.
They are dealing with a lot of issues, and we have to support them. And however, it's very hard to do so.
How are they being supported? This is all in Miami, right?
This is all in Miami, but I mean, I take care of HIV-infected children, and we're seeing this throughout the board. We're seeing it in Montreal. We're seeing it in other areas in the United States as well.
Well, because they're not only HIV-positive, they don't have parents.
They don't have parents. 80% of them are... You know, and now whether or not there's probably a lot of socioeconomic influences in this. But I do suspect that HIV does play a role as well.
So are you continuing to study this population?
Yes, we are. I mean, this is just a the first step is the descriptive study. The second step is going to be a retrospective study of the same cohort, asking the questions. The ones that actually fared worse in 2005 or at the end point that we decided, were they the ones that had higher viral loads? Were they the ones that had more psychosocial problems? Were they the ones that had more hospitalizations? And did this affect them in the future?
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on IDSA 2007 from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/IDSA 2007.